Text or WhatsApp your view to Greg on 086 60 25,000.
Or indeed, give us a call on 07491 25,000. Good morning. You're very welcome back to the 9 till noon show here on Highland Radio. We were talking in the first hour to a lady who came to the assistance of another lady, an older lady, thought to be in her 80s, who's up in Letterkenny from down south, and she became wanton, desperate for the toilet. She was in, how would you describe that area, Caroline? How would you describe that area of shops in Letterkenny? Some people have a nickname for it. The new retail park, we'll not use the nickname, right? The new retail park. She became desperate for the toilet there and was told the nearest toilet is McDonald's, and tried to cross over the road, fell over. It was raining and she fell and hurt herself and still required the toilet. But thankfully, the listener assisted her, took her for a cup of tea and everything, which is fantastic. But it comes down to the fact that why are there still no public toilets in that new retail park? And this caller asks really quite a very good question, I think, and it's a simple one. I don't understand how planning permission can be granted to large shopping centres without accessible public toilets being included in the application. Most people would have to agree with that. Simon Harris, Taoiseach Simon Harris, is in Derry today. A caller asks, will the A5 route be announced today? Well, that's subject to ongoing litigation, isn't it? The Irish government has committed to part fund the A5, so unless he reiterates that, I don't think any announcement can come today. Excuse me, please. I was going to a shop in a town in Donegal and I was told I wasn't allowed to use the toilets in the shop. The pub next door was also closed. There were no toilet facilities in the shop for the public. This is happening across the board. And on this occasion, I believe they were in Carndonagh. And as I say, there seems to be a particular instance here in Donegal as well of conditions that people might need a toilet at very short notice. Greg, there's no point in promoting the Wild Atlantic Way at the moment as there's no accommodation in Donegal, none that people can afford. Yeah, and maybe that's reflected in tourism numbers. I'll be very interested to see the Donegal tourism figures for this year compared to last or previous years. I would burn my Oasis tickets if the Wolftones had any part in the performance. They have spent their career inciting their audience into hatred for anything British. Okay, that's from a caller who saw them previously and didn't like their performances or indeed some of their songs whereby the IRA is mentioned in it. So that's one listener's point of view. They would burn their Oasis tickets. I wonder, do they have them though? Just wondering if anyone else had issue with Air charging late fees. That's the phone company. I had paid the bill for the previous month and on my most recent, I was being charged for this month, last month, and a late payment fee. When I mentioned it in the post office, I was informed it was the third time that morning that someone had this issue. So this could be really useful, you know, because maybe there's many of you out there, or maybe there isn't, but maybe there are many of you out there who've, or maybe check your bills to see if there's a late fee from Air. This is a listener who is fully up to date with their bill, but noticed a late payment fee, and the post office informed them that they were the third person that morning that had this issue. Anyone else out there, let us know, because it might be something we need to raise with Air if it's widespread. 086 60 25,000. We'd be more than happy to get behind that. A caller says, why aren't there streetlights from Rorty's house in Knockestrolla to Bumbeg Crossroads? This is where they're needed most. There's been a new footpath and lights installed this past year from Fire Crossroads to Bumbeg Crossroads, which is about 5k. They did realign the corner at Rorty's house a few months ago, so I'm not sure if this is why there aren't lights on that section, but not sure about the rest of the road towards Bumbeg as the footpath has been there for years. So that's quite specific to an area there. A quick recap for this hour of today's competition. It's in association with our sponsors, Breeden's House to Home, Bridgend and Maville. They've got a vast array of goodies in both stores for you, of course, and you will have €200 to go towards a purchase because we've got a €200 voucher to give away today. And we're asking you to rearrange some letters to create a household object that you can buy in Breeden's. The letters are BLEAT, bleat. Rearrange those letters to come up with a household item that you'd expect to find, and you would, in Breeden's House to Home, Bridgend and Maville. Text or WhatsApp your answer to 086 60 25,000 and you could win that €200 voucher today. We've got 200 each day this week. Okay, for many of us, me or many of the listeners who enjoy sport, you would have noticed at one point cigarettes seemed to be everywhere in sport, at another it would be something else, and now you would notice that betting, gambling is seems to be an integral spot, a part of sports coverage. Perhaps we're at an advantage because we've seen it happen and maybe we can differentiate a little bit in what's going on. But if you were born in the last, I don't know how many years, a couple of decades or whatever, you might not be able to differentiate between sport and enjoying sport and gambling, such as the way it's marketed and the amount of money they use to sponsor it and what have you. And some of the major companies that provide sport also having an interest in betting. Sky amongst them, DAZN, they launched DAZN. Next thing you know, there's a DAZN betting app. So one seems to support the other. Children. Our children see gambling now as a normal part of sport. This is from the work of Dr. Paul James Kitchens, Senior Lecturer at Ulster University's School of Sport, and he's with us right now. Dr. Paul, thank you so much for joining us. So I suppose it's very interesting to read this. I don't think much of it might surprise us. What were your findings, Paul?
Hi, Greg. Thanks very much for offering me to come on today and talk about this research, which is very, very interesting. But I mean, our findings really revolved around sort of four particular areas that, unlike you and me, these, you know, 18-year-olds and under no longer fight for the remote control. They're watching TV on their mobile phones, in their bedrooms, in their schools, wherever it might be, they're there watching it. And of course, they're therefore exposed to a significant number of gambling messages and communications. The second part being that exposure was so detailed that they could recall many adverts, they could discuss what were funny ones and what were not. They knew them inside and out, and they could associate people and brands with gambling. And then obviously from that, there's a range of sort of perceptions and misunderstandings that come from that. And probably the most important one is young people don't associate social harm from gambling. They just think you can lose your money. But in that, they still think that gambling makes a nice fit with sport compared to, say, Vodafone's sponsorship of rugby or fast food company's sponsorship of sport. So they're all three sort of concerning findings. And yes, so the important research, that's the first sort of time in the Republic of Ireland we've studied children's views of gambling marketing.
And it's not surprising, is it? I mean, I'm not sure if this is still used the tagline, but there's one better sporting company, one betting company up until very recently, their tagline, "It matters more when there's money on it." The advertisers will chase the young people and the rest of us to where they are. So yes, you can see a goal just as it's scored in the Premier League, but there's a role ad beforehand and it's for a betting company. And the sense is that you're really only enjoying something with your mates if you're betting 50p on the next throw-in. But we know that's not what happens, isn't it?
No, that's right. That's right. And of course, the marketing of gambling is very important to keep new customers coming in, because while there are significant customers with significant personal and social issues, there's still a big throughput of customers all the time. So appealing to young people to become new customers of gambling operators is very, very important. And making sure they see or associate sport and gambling with being with your mates and sharing things is particularly important, even if that is a far cry from the experience of those people who have very serious issues with their gambling.
And it's how they consume the sport too. It's interesting because, you know, most people with teenagers might know this, but I've got... two of my boys are teenagers, both could literally tell you anything about soccer, for an example.
Yep.
But I don't recall either of the two of them ever sitting through a game. It's not how they watch it now. They know everything that's happened. They can sit and go through all the talking points, but from the blow off to the end, maybe yep. I'm wrong on a rare occasion, but they don't watch sport like that.
No. We found that most of the young people that... watch highlights of sport on whether it be the football apps, the Sky Sports apps, various ways of getting information. And of course, they watch curated YouTube videos, which unfortunately are top and tail with gambling communications, which was what we found also in our follow-up to this study.
How aware are children about the loss of money or the consequences of it?
Yes, you're right. That's one thing that young people are aware of, that you'll lose money from that. And some of the young people in the conversation we had around Letterkenny and Derry, they realise you could lose your house. But that connection between, well, then your family's at risk and then other people at risk wasn't quite put together. So while that's fine that young people don't know that, I think it's really important for us to try and communicate that there are social harms that come from disordered gambling.
I'd say all of the children would have been aware that you can become addicted to drink and drugs and the issues that create. Was there an awareness of the potential for addiction to gambling amongst young people?
It wasn't so much an awareness for an addiction, because we focused very much on young people who consume sport.
Right.
And therefore we didn't go much into sort of gambling habits. And of course that was important because we wanted to look at young people in Ireland who watch sport, which is a more generic thing than young people who might enjoy a bet. And of course, it's very important to make sure that they were aware of whatever risks and stuff they come up with. And it was very much that personal risk. You could lose money, but no further than that as such. And the understanding of how you get hooked wasn't quite as informed as other older people we'd spoken to as well.
What was the brand awareness of gambling betting companies amongst young people?
Well, fairly strong. There is one gambling operator
Paddy Power,
very well known across the island of Ireland for very innovative and amusing communications they have. But this is all part of their raison d'etre to entertain and to get people to like their brand. And therefore, when you're looking at your first betting app on your phone, that's the brand that comes to mind. That's the one you choose. So they did have good knowledge of the companies, yeah.
In the blurred lines then between, you know, gambling and sport providers, betting companies, was there any polling of the younger people to determine if they realised that they were actually a product, in other words, or
they, in terms of the
that the children were the product effectively, or did they just, I wonder, did they just say, no, it's gambling and it's sport is gambling? But I wonder, did they realise that it's they that these companies are actually targeting?
No, they felt that they weren't being targeted. Now, whoever we spoke to, whether it be 14-year-olds or 17-year-olds, all thought it was for someone else. But, and that might be an argument to say, well, actually, they don't know about, you know, who's targeted, and the adverts aren't having directed at them. But they gave us detailed recall of particular adverts which were not aimed at them, were not targeted at them, but still could recall who was in it, where they was, what the strap line was, all these things. So while it might not be officially directed at them, they are very well aware of it and they understand it completely.
Because the marketing is very clever. I mean, you might have, say, for instance, a drinks company, a massive drinks company, and the pressure might be on them not to be so involved in sport. So how do you get your name out there? Well, what you do is you start pushing your 0-0 product, right? Because it's a good message, isn't it? You can enjoy your football and remember how it happens. But you're actually really, what you're also doing is you're getting your brand to people. And I think an awful lot of the with the betting where it's, you know, set your limits and all this kind of stuff, that message is so saturated now that really those ads actually feel like just further pushing the brand to people, if that makes sense.
That's correct, absolutely correct. And I think in phase one in this research, we had some inklings from various young people in these three sites that we researched that they sort of understood that. And of course, when we did the follow-up, and we saw that very clearly in terms of those links between us. So, yeah, they don't really understand the safer gambling messages in the focus groups, but they do understand it's a way of developing a brand. They could talk about who's safer gambling adverts or even indeed how one operator had more amusing safer gambling adverts than others.
So do we know if, say, for instance, your Eric Cantona or whoever it might be, their involvement in gambling advertisement, did that particularly land or have an effect on young people?
Yes, we looked at some examples of social media influencers, including an ex-footballer who is now a celebrity in his own right, and work he does with one operator with his wife. And it was his wife that cut through with some of the young women in our groups. And they're able to connect that to the footballer. And without trying to name him or the gambling operator, they knew that he was associated with football, uh-huh. which the whole reason for him being involved was he wasn't meant to be for this age group. They would have seen him as a celebrity, but they knew he's next footballer.
Yeah.
They associate the sport. And then the other example being a larger, more famous international celebrity and his inability to do very well at gambling was also well known. And they see these people and how it impacts their lifestyles, and they may want that sort of lifestyle.
Yeah,
that's a real concern.
It's interesting because, you know, we see lots of very famous sports people, ex-sports people promoting gambling, and then we have this other cohort of former sports people who themselves became addicted to gambling on the other side of it out there trying to push an alternative message. It really is almost like a battle for the minds of the young people, isn't it? You mentioned this a little earlier on about the focus groups, and you've mentioned one of which was in Letterkenny. I want to understand the purpose of showing them the shirts with a fast food provider, a gambling firm, and a communications company, and then getting them to respond to that and how you interpreted those answers. So what was the purpose of that exercise?
Sure. Well, one of the key things, you know, as a parent of teenagers, Greg, like myself, is getting young people to talk in groups is quite difficult sometimes. So what we use is photos to elicitate discussion. So we use them throughout the focus groups. And when you show a photo, people feel they've got something to talk to or talk about. So what we wanted to do was, rather than, particularly important in this, not just go in with gambling messages. They knew this topic and talk was going to be on gambling, but instead of that, we entered with a Vodafone sponsorship of a big Irish sports property. We looked at a fast food sponsorship of a football club, and then we looked at a gambling sponsorship of an English Premier League club. Excuse me, Greg. And then we got them to talk about what they might be trying to do and what it means. So therefore, they knew that we'd bring in money, could buy new players, new kit, new resources. That's all very well and good. And a couple made the association where they're trying to look good because these sports brands are good. Then we asked them to rank their suitability. So we had three choices. So obviously one, two, or three. And we would assume that probably Vodafone would come out because most of them are mobile phone customers and they know about these sort of brands. And then we thought, because we're here to talk about gambling marketing and we're, you know, obviously a bit concerned in it, they'll probably rank that last. But they didn't. They ranked most of the focus groups ranked gambling operator as the highest or most suitable fit for sport, which we believe echoes this idea of the normalization of sport, because the kids felt it has the most to do with sport. And then the phone, and then the fast food company. So they've already associated that fast food's unhealthy, doesn't associate with sport, therefore it shouldn't be ranked higher, yet they're not making that connection with gambling and sport.
Now, these focus group meetings were held in Derry, Letterkenny and Newry, and I'm sure it didn't form part of the study, but I just wonder, going through the data, were there any geographical differences that were so obvious that they jumped out?
No, I think the only differences were in terms of the sports that the young people like to watch.
Okay.
Now, that's because the way we recruited to things, we use community associations and local sports clubs. And so, of course, those local sports clubs dictate what the young people are probably most interested in. So where we've got two sports, one sport in Newry and one sport in Letterkenny, we had a community association in Derry, and that was that they were sort of more multi-sport. So there's slight differences there, but generally the findings, as you'll see them in that paper, are generalised across all three groups and all 51 young people.
Yeah, everyone will remember looking back when, you know, the snooker was sponsored by Embassy, and every racing car and Marlboro on the side of it, whatever it would be. And we came to a point in society where we realised that this was damaging, actually mostly to adults, I think, funny enough. And we said, right, we're going to have to get rid of this. And I remember all of these sports saying, we're going to have to leave the Crucible, and there'll never be Formula One again, and this is just going to signal the death. But you know what? Things changed and everyone survived. Are we at a point whereby, you know, the UK, Ireland governments need to actually sort of try and decouple gambling and sport? And you know, for the most part, it probably is new adapters. I think a lot of adults, we can always take a different path in life, but maybe our behaviour is locked in to some extent. But we've a responsibility to new generations of people coming through to say, right, we looked at the public health impacts of smoking. When are we going to start looking at the public health impacts of gambling? And as I say, it's particularly, I think, to protect children and adolescents.
That's correct. Yes. I mean, hopefully as soon as possible, Greg, because in the gambling bill currently proceeding through Parliament, and obviously with the white paper from the UK Parliament, and of course this research involves North and South on this island, both governments have a vested interest in looking to restrict young people from harm. Kids have rights. They have a right not to sit and watch gambling communications as it goes. But in terms of the concerns about what this would mean for sport if this was all banned, then of course, yes, that is the industry's playbook, because tobacco used it, alcohol's used it, all these harmful products. We know marketing impacts public health. So we're waiting for a government, and there'll be a debate about this because there are people who don't believe this. They might feel it's intrusion, but I don't feel that, kids have rights, and it's not necessarily for me to say, but for governments to protect those rights.
I think what's actually required is brave legislators that have to make tough decisions. And listen, in fairness, it's happened in the past, but this is about batting off the lobbying, batting off the argument about this, that, and the other. But the problem is like even something like horse racing in this country, we're so married to it, right? We actually financially support it out of taxpayers' money, which is crazy. So we've a long way to go, I think. But it's going to take brave legislation, someone who's going to be prepared to be right, mm-hmm. even though they're told they're going to be wrong.
Well, I felt Minister Brown was pretty brave with the gambling bill as it is so far. I mean, his words around this idea, this is a public health bill, it's to restrict harm, they're all very important. I mean, he's showing a lot of bravery. This industry is very well funded. It's supported by a range of think tanks and other organisations who see this as the thin end of the wedge. So people who produce very sugary drinks, fast food, they'll all be concerned about this because, like dominoes, they could fold, and we could see that this communication just isn't important for our kids, and they can make their own decisions around their lifestyle when they turn the right age.
And finally, I think often at this point, there's people listening, adults listening, who are kind of going, hold on a sec, this is another government overreach. I'm a fully grown adult. I can do with what my... Gambling will always exist, and gambling will be never banned. What we're talking about here is companies spending billions of euro specifically to target young people to try to get them gambling. And they're trying to pour water on the seeds of opening boxes to see what prize you can get from, you know, opening card packs in your game of FIFA. This is the next stage after that. Those seeds have been sown. And now, as you head into your teenage years and you've got your phone, this is the next stage of it. So this is not about a man or woman who wants to put a fiver each way in the Grand National or bet on the outcome of a football match. This is about how our children are being actively targeted as potential.
Absolutely agree. Let me be very clear. This research is around the communication of gambling to all sorts of people from all sorts of backgrounds. It's not about stopping gambling or preventing people who are legal gamblers to actually bet more or to bet. It's simply to reduce the amount of exposure that young people are seeing against their choice when they want to watch sport, whether it be on their mobile phones or on TV at home with their friends and family.
All right. It's fascinating stuff. Thank you very much, Dr. Paul James Kitchen. Really appreciate it.
Thank you very much, Greg.
Take care. He's senior lecturer at Ulster University, Ulster University School of Sport. Do you have a view on that? And it could be completely at odds to what I think myself and the doctor possibly agree on there, is the targeting of young people. And, you know, like, it has become a norm here, and the market's established here for betting companies. But it's interesting to note today that Paddy Power, one of the biggest betting companies of all, they've targeted 315 million euro into Brazil. Is that a euro sign or a pound sign? But anyway, so in Brazil currently at the moment, and this would be an interesting thing to watch, actually. So we could actually watch from ground zero as to how marketing and money can change something around. Because currently at the moment, and what a lovely place to live in Brazil, 1 in 10 people have a gambling problem. So they could, presumably, we could see that number increase. Paddy Power Flutter, the company behind Paddy Power and Betfair, is taking a hefty punt of 350 million euro on the Brazilian market. The gambling powerhouse is eyeing up a majority stake in a company over there. Flutter Entertainment wants to purchase a 56% stake in NSX Group, which owned Bet McLonnell. Flutter will increase the stake to in NSX to in 5 and 10 years' time once the deal is sealed. So they're probably obviously seeing potential in that market. They're prepared to spend big. Okay, we're joined on the programme now by Senator Nikki Bradley, who, of course, is a Fine Gael general election candidate here in County Donegal. Good morning to you, Nikki. Thanks for your time.
No worries. Good to be on. Greg, how are you?
Good, thanks. Good. You've been raising the issue of legroom on, general. Is it public transport, airplanes, or is it specific to airlines that are trying to squeeze as many people in as possible? What's your experiences been?
Well, to be honest, it's far from just airlines, I have to say. It's everything down to auditoriums. I've had experiences locally here in the older the auditorium or the venue, say if you're going to the theatre, a few places like that, the older the building, the worse it is. And yes, certainly airlines, buses, trains, etc. I've seen huge issues depending on the airline. You know, we all know a certain one that tries to squeeze as many on as possible. The legroom there is for somebody like myself, is very uncomfortable if you're traveling long haul, to the point where I now have to just bear the brunt of additional costs and go with different airlines because it's too, you arrive in agony and it's not worth it.
Are they in any way accommodating?
To be fair to them, so if we were to just be specific with an airline, to be fair, they can't actually do anything. And what I would say is, and with just in with traveling in general for people with disabilities, what I had to learn the hard way a long time ago is it's up to me. The onus is on me as the person with a disability to be as prepared as possible. So, for example, even down to when I'm booking my flight, because my prosthetic is on the right leg, I will always book a seat on the left hand side of the plane on the aisle. So when the aisle is, and I wouldn't want to obstruct the walkway for anyone else, but, you know, during the flight, when the aisle is clear, and if I am in pain, at least I have that space that I can tilt my body and put my leg out into the aisle just to get a little bit of relief. Whereas if you're in the middle, I know nobody likes to travel in the middle, but for somebody with a disability, it's a no-go. That's...
And often too with the budget airlines or the smaller airlines too, they often you have to use the steps, or they park the planes in more remote parts of the airport. So there might be a shuttle bus, right? But you still have to walk down the stairs of the plane, make your way to the shuttle bus, stand often because the seats are all gone because I'm never out quick enough, and then back to the airport, and then a long way even just to, you know, passport control or whatever it might be. So again, that's another thing, maybe pushing people with a disability into the more expensive airlines.
Yes, it is to a certain extent. But what I will say in defense of the airlines, they do run, obviously, you know, they have assistance that you can avail of. You can avail of that when you're booking your flight. And it's the same with parking at the airport. You can, if you have a blue badge, you can park in certain spots. Specifically with the stairs on an airline, I will say they're an issue even with assistance because the wheelchair at the bottom of the steps. Mm-hmm. So you have to, the passenger has to get from the top to the bottom. And quite often, if you are a wheelchair user and you've no way down yourself, you will be carried. And I think what people forget is, and what I would encourage people to do, is put yourself in that person's shoes. Imagine starting your holiday that way. Imagine the loss of dignity that you would feel in that moment where everyone will be openly staring at you. They'll try not to, but you can see them at the corner of your eye staring. That's simply not good enough.
And being carried is quite a personal thing as well, as much as anything.
100%. Yeah. I don't know. I it hasn't happened to me. I do have a disability, so I can certainly empathize more so than maybe a lot of people. But I can't imagine what that must feel like. And I just think that there's no reason for that anymore. There should be alternative measures in place for people with disabilities to safely disembark an airline while maintaining their dignity.
Yeah, and you know, often when we talk about these the issues that affect people with a disability in particular, we're talking about those that do travel and what they endure, or those that try and drive into a town and they get frustrated that a parking space is unavailable due to someone illegally parking there. And it always comes to my mind then those that have had the one experience or the two experience and stop it. Stop going into town or stop refusing that invite to a wedding in Italy or something. Do you know what I mean? Because they don't want to face that hassle or indignity or however they want to frame it in their own perspective.
Exactly. And I think as well, what we need to remember is that for people to put themselves in that situation in the first place may have taken, you know, a big pep talk for them that morning to actually go in the first place. And then if all of that happens, that is exactly why they then don't want to do it again. Mm. And it's really hard to push yourself and make yourself just revisit that unpleasant experience. But what I would say is, and again, this is, you know, I can't make anybody do anything, but what I would encourage people to do is to not give up on that, because it, you know, that is your direct link with your own independence. And there are certain things that, you know, that you can do that will make life a little bit easier. I know that I'm currently working with the DDAI, the Disabled Drivers Association of Ireland, to bring in a text alert scheme to try and, we launched it last year in Galway, to try and reduce the misuse of, you know, the illegal parking in Blue Badge bays. So the idea behind that would be that you'd simply text the warden if you saw somebody misusing them, and that warden can then come and issue a fine. So there are things that are happening to help people. But what I would just really encourage people to do is to not give up on it, because it genuinely breaks my heart when I hear those stories, and I hear them all the time, that you have a bad experience with travel and it stops you from going wherever it is you want to go.
I mean, for the general population, the price we have to pay to fly and listen, in fairness to the budget airlines, they give many of us opportunities to fly that never would have before, right? But it is a business model, you know, pack them tight and what have you. And the planes are uncomfortable for everyone. But of course, a particular inconvenience with a person with a particular disability, for an example. So I can't see them ceding ground unless it's legislated for. And, you know, we are part of a European Union. All countries have signed up, albeit some late to the party, to respect people's rights and what have you. So is this not what Brussels is for? To sort of say, right, you know what, we want to recognise that everyone has the right to travel as equally as possible, and we'll put the pressure on the airlines. And that's how it changes.
100%. I completely agree with you. And I think that if you cannot, for whatever reason, travel with, I'm just going to say it, the likes of Ryanair, because their legroom is quite short, reduced rates for people with disabilities should be offered with other airlines, so they can go with an airline that has greater legroom. And it's horrible, but the seats on an airplane that we all want are the exit seats, but we can't, as people with disability. I've ended up inadvertently booking them without even realizing it, or I've had a flight booked for me and I've ended up sitting there, and you kind of forget for a second and you think, oh, this is great, I'm going to have this. And then they come over. As soon as they see my crutches, I'm just
never thought about that.
There.
Yeah. Again, another, which can be quite, you know.
Yeah. You're basically awkward, told, go sit somewhere else. Yeah. You can't sit there because you have a disability. And I understand, you know, I always look at both sides. I understand why I can't sit there. But I 100% agree with what you've just said, that this is something that putting pressure on the airlines to try and, first of all, recognize that people with disabilities have just as much right to travel and see the world as anyone else. And also, people with disabilities may need to travel for work. You know, they may have a job that requires that. And, you know, I often think that disabled people are overlooked. It's assumed we're all sitting at home, you know, just doing nothing. And that is not the case. Mm-hmm. Most people want to live a very full and active life. But these are the kind of challenges they face everywhere they go. And with small changes, it could make a huge difference to their lives.
I mentioned in the preamble there, you are a Fine Gael general election candidate, and you know, we have a fair idea when the election will be. It's not that far away, one way or other, and we're kind of sort of we're starting to get into the throes of it. You're talking of a different way of running a campaign, what a traditional campaign might be seen as. Talk to me about that.
Yeah, so I will be running a hybrid campaign. So obviously, it's probably the clues in the name there. It'll be a mix of in-person going door to door, because that is so important and I want to meet with people, but also running different sessions online. So canvassing both online and in person. And the reason for that is simply because of my disability. I'm not physically able to knock on every door that I need to knock on in Donegal. And I had to come up with a plan B. And while I was thinking about the different ways to do this, I actually realized that by doing this, I'm able to, even though it'll help me, I'll also be able to help others with disabilities that can't travel to the various events that I would be organizing. So what we're planning on doing is having different online sessions. So, for example, I'm organizing one for disability groups where it's kind of like, I'm going to leave it super simple. It's almost like an open mic night. I want to create an online evening where people with disabilities can share the issues that they're facing with me, that I do the listening and they do the talking, and they can do it from the comfort of their own home. So for people that, say if I was organising an event in Letterkenny and you live maybe in Dunloe or somewhere and travelling is just simply not an option, you will be able to, from the comfort of your home, join in the conversation. And the same with various youth groups, women in business. There's a number of different evenings that I'm planning that will allow people to join the conversation comfortably from their home. But it will also help me. And it's, as much as it's necessary for me, I also think that it's the times that we're in, this is the way campaigns should be.
Should it be though, Nikki? I don't question for a second your motivation and the reasons why. You know, but what we saw in the council elections, and some would say is a critical part of, to the point, let's say for instance, that I can mention Sinn Féin because their party leader referenced this recently. They've changed their strategy because of the reaction they were receiving on the doorstep, and also to obviously losing 60% of the vote they had in the previous council elections. There was a reaction to that. Is an important part of democracy, and whilst I understand your reasons, that you do have to go and knock on someone's door and face them down. It's nice, right, to have a space where you're in control, like the Zoom space, and if someone gets a bit argy or you don't like what they're saying, you know, you can chair that. Is there not something particularly important, though? And as I say, your situation is very different. I don't know if this is the future or could be the future, because I think there's something very important, is there not, in that, having the testicular fortitude or whatever fortitude it might be to knock that door and face that person and ask them for that vote.
I see your point, and I suppose I'm torn on it because we do need to start using what we have access to. Now, I don't know what way other people would run their evenings. I certainly wouldn't be. If somebody had a point to make, I wouldn't be stopping that point, mm-hmm. because the whole point of these online evenings is that people are given their opportunity to speak. And if I don't like what they're saying, that's just my problem.
Yeah.
You know, I will be sitting there listening. Now, I know that's me saying that. That might not be the case for everybody. And I certainly see your point. I think that it's certainly a conversation that we should be having.
Yeah.
Because to use time efficiently, Donegal is an absolutely massive county. So much time is spent actually traveling in the car. That time could be spent doing online bits and pieces that are helping with the campaign. But yeah, certainly with my case, I suppose I'll be a test subject. Let's see what happens here.
Yeah.
I definitely will be knocking on doors because I want to meet people. But I'll maybe be looking at different areas that have people, you know, certain estates, you might know that it has a slightly older population. And if they're less likely, and I'm not generalizing here, but if I feel they're less likely to have spotted an Instagram post of mine, that's an estate that I would knock on every house and have those conversations, because I want to have those conversations with those people. But because, as I said, I can't knock on them all, rather than just missing people, I want to give that opportunity that they can join me online.
It is going to be interesting, because we have 50-odd% of the population that simply don't want to engage because they don't go out and vote. And how do you reach those to try and draw them into an online space? You know what I mean? But as I say, it's the way you're going to go. I'm not saying it's the wrong way. It's just I'd be fascinated to see how it works for you, because well, as I say,
other,
yeah, go ahead.
From the beginning, sorry to interrupt, but since I became a senator, one of the things that I wanted to do that I've always done before was share the journey, show a little bit of behind the scenes of politics that I'm learning as I go as well. And I honestly believe that that will create a bit more interest, because the reason that a lot of people possibly don't vote, and look, some of the people I know are those people that don't vote, is because they're not interested. They feel that the issues, they don't understand them, or they just don't have an interest in them. But what everybody has an interest in is something behind the scenes. It's kind of seeing into the, you know, we always love in a film watching the bloopers, watching the behind the scenes bits. That's just human nature. Mm-hmm. So if I can bring a more human element to this whole process, in my head anyway, I feel that that may encourage people to listen a little bit more.
Yeah. I mean, we heard today that specific to this region, the HSC's put a block on. There's 100-odd people, as you'd be aware, that are waiting for extension of the home care packages. The HSC in this area specifically has put a freeze on that. So the 100-odd families that are expecting maybe additional hours or additional supports have been told you're not going to get that, and possibly not before the end of next year. There's a further 150 people just on the home care packages alone who are on a queue for home care packages. And part of the way they get those is others don't need them any longer, whether they go into hospital or indeed sadly pass away. In Dublin, the waiting list is zero. I need someone to come and knock on my door and tell me why that's not right, who's responsible, and how it's going to be fixed. That's just one example, do you know? And I think that's maybe what the people want to hear. I'm not asking you to comment on that specific because it would be an ambush, and I'm not interested in doing that, well, Nikki.
I will.
That's
just
not
jump
my point.
In.
But, you know, that's just one story we've done today, and we do the multiples every day here in the programme.
Well, to go into the bigger picture of Donegal, the reason that I'm running in the first place is to be a voice for Donegal, because to be quite honest with you, I'm sick of Donegal not getting what we need and what we deserve. And I think everybody has that feeling. You've just made that point about waiting lists in Dublin being very different to other parts of the country, and certainly up in Donegal. We had our think-in last week in Tullamore, and I shared some quite specific feelings that I had on this matter about Donegal not getting the airtime that they need. And as you mentioned, that's one point. It's a very big issue that a lot of people are being affected by, but it's just one that affects Donegal. There are so many others. And my main priority will be to try and put an end to us getting things way later than everyone else. That has to stop. It's not good enough. And quite simply, I'm not going to stand for it. Mm-hmm. And I think I'll be using, you can probably hear the annoyance in my voice, I'll be using that as my drive to push forward on these issues. You know, in the last couple of months, I've been inundated with people locally coming to me with different HSE-related issues that we're one at a time trying to resolve for people. And it's, you know, again, being very honest, it can be overwhelming because you genuinely want to help, but it's also, it's eye-opening to see what is happening in our county. Mm-hmm. There's so much work that needs to be done. So I want to assure your listeners that My heart is in the right place with everything that I'm looking to do. And as I said, I really do want to be a voice for the people of Donegal.
Finally, Senator, it's kind of become a joke question at this stage. Are you prepping for November or February?
I honestly, if you know, please tell me.
No.
Genuinely. We're all in the same boat here is what I would say there. So we're prepping for whenever it'll be.
Okay.
That's all I can say.
Thanks for that. I appreciate your time. Senator Nikki Bradley, Fine Gael general election candidate as well. By law, as a sit-in takeaway, you're legally obliged to provide toilets. The same does not apply to shops. It's up to the business indeed, of course, as well. Yeah, but if you had it as part of the planning, then they would be there. Tourism in Donegal is down because of our extortionate prices. I know a man going to Benidorm in March. Flights and accommodation all-inclusive, $4.90 per head. Ireland is a rip-off. You won't get a hotel room for less than €180 a night. And another, I got a lovely apologetic letter from Aircom that you'd taken double out of my bill and would rectify it the next day. We need to speak more positively. We need to forgive. Okay. That's very nice. And good. Good that that's the case for you. Michael McClafferty, Councillor Michael McClafferty, was on to us read lights in Knockestollar. He says there's currently no funding for those lights as advised by the engineers to him. The lights are most definitely needed, but if there's no funding, they cannot be done. But as soon as funding becomes available, they will be installed, we're assured.